Hello, everybody, and welcome to Calling All Black Sheep. I'm Marielle Smith.
And I'm Jenny Chow.
And today's show's intent is to shine a little bit of light on people who are exploring alternative ways of healing, teaching, and really just being and living in life. You can kind of say we are having a bit of a spiritual variety show on Calling All Black Sheep. We're going to be interviewing a number of people who are in the area of alternative healing, alternative medicine, plant medicine, like today. So join us again for that. Now, the person that we are interviewing today is, now, Jason, I didn't get a chance to ask you how to pronounce your last name, so I'm gonna just give it a try. Jason Grichanek.
Perfect.
Okay, great. That's always good to know. Now, Jason, you're joining us today. A little background. I'm going to say a little bit about from the bio of your website, but we would love to hear it from you as well. We understand that you have a really keen interest in plants, plant medicine, food, and that curiosity started a long time ago, I'm going to say, a few years back, down in the Amazon. And you're joining us today because Jenny has experienced ceremony with you recently and not so recently as well.
Well, actually, I have a really funny story about Jason.
Would you like to share it?
Yes, I'm going to share it. And so what happened was I was down in the bowels of the Amazon with Jason, and he was teaching me some Qigong, some Tai Chi, and it was really hot. And he's a beautiful person, beautiful in physical features and beautiful on the inside. He was so beautiful, I fainted. Yeah, and so that's how we...
That's how you met?
That's how we met. We got along really well.
You fainted in front of him.
And since then, that's why he's on the show.
That's great.
I know.
That's a good story. Funny. That's a good story. Fainting is not
yeah
not
he, well
common.
He caught me, which is great, because actually he
started didn't let her fall, Jason.
I didn't realize it, but I that was actually the first time I'd fainted, so it was so nice that you caught me. So it was great, because I realized, you know, I didn't actually realize I fainted until he was like, are you okay? Like, I think so.
I love it. So Jason, let's start off with a question about what was life prior to plant medicine, because people's journeys are always so different. We tend to not see the differences until the journey happens and we're down the road. So what was life like prior to where you are now?
That's a big question. I guess my initial interest in plants probably started when I was, I guess I was about 22 when I moved up to New York City. And I was doing a lot of acting at the time, working in film, theater. I was bartending, just doing a whole sort, you know, whole bunch of things, kind of young and in New York, enjoying life. But I was kind of fortunate as a kid. My father was really into traveling. And so my parents were divorced, and every summer I'd go spend with my father. And so every summer he'd kind of take me on these journeys over the world. And kind of looking back, I think one thing that might have had an influence was probably when I was like 16 or 18, we went to India. And there's this, you know, in a lot of the Hindu culture, there's a big reverence for cows, and people don't eat beef. And I think that was one of the first times in my life where I actually started to question, like, you know, why do we eat certain things? Why don't we eat certain things? What are some people's beliefs? And so I think when I went to college, I decided to give up red meat just as an experience. I think, especially being in India and seeing these living animals, it somehow seemed like, you know, maybe I don't need to kill these things in order to survive. And then that slowly gave way to cutting out all meat. But that was more, I think, from kind of a moral point of view. It didn't really have so much to do with nutrition or health or you know, any of the myriad reasons people might begin to work with plants. And then I think another thing that really had a big impact was I was actually shooting a film in New York one day. And we were sitting down to eat, and we had this really long shoot. It was like an 18-hour shoot over the course of a couple days. And it was mostly younger people in the shoot. And there's this one guy, and he must have been in his 80s. And he was this bundle of energy. And he was just, you know, we were all like passed out after 18 hours. And this guy just had like limitless energy. And we sat down for lunch the next day. And I noticed he just had this massive salad. And it was kind of weird. That was the first time I think I'd ever seen that, because we had this, you know, whole catering service and all of these food options. And I think he noticed that I wasn't eating any meat, and he started talking to me, and he kind of told me a story. And he, you know, at like 30 years old, he was diagnosed with some incurable disease, and the doctors gave him a few months to live. And so he kind of just decided, like, hey, you know, since I'm going to die anyway, I'm just going to go live my dream. So he ended up moving to Tahiti, and, you know, days went by, weeks went by, and years started to go by, and he realized he was fine. And he said he's actually started to question, like, well, what's different? And one thing he realized was his, you know, obviously his lifestyle had changed. He didn't have as much stress, but he started noticing he was really just eating like pure food, like pure plants, pure fruit right from the land. And it got him into this idea of kind of raw or living food nutrition. And you know, 60 years later, he's alive and just a ball of energy. And I think that was the first time for me where I really started to correlate food with nutrition and plants as nutrition and food as medicine. And I think that really kind of then started a journey of actually deciding, like, you know, what is it I'm putting in my body and why, and what are these things actually doing? And, you know, why am I eating this or not eating this? Or what is this actually doing when I put it in my body? What's the chemical structure going on? And I think that really got me interested in just plants, you know, because so much of our food is plants. I mean, you know, even if we eat meat, that's just in a way like reconstituted plant material. So, you know, so much of our food is plant-based. And then, you know, when you start to look at our medicine, even our Western pharmaceutical medicine is something like 75% plant derived. Mm. And so it really just started to spark my interest. And so I think then my interest kind of moved into food and food as nutrition and, you know, just experimenting with different diets and how that can really affect us. And from there, it kind of branched out into medicine, you know, like, not only obviously food changes the way we feel, it's our energy, but then also looking at it, like, if we have specific ailments, specific diseases, like, how can these plants actually help to cure it? And I think that really got me interested in kind of herbal medicine and using plants to treat specific ailments. And I think in the course of learning that, this idea of Amazonian medicine started to come to surface, because you know, a lot of these plants that they work with in the Amazon are really, really strong plants. And I think initially there was some resistance to that on my part, because I think I had this idea that, you know, kind of everything we need is always within us, and we don't really need to reach out. And I think a lot of these plants, like, you know, for example, ayahuasca, I had friends in the Santo Daime church, and, you know, he was always kind of giving me these invitations to go, but something about it just didn't resonate. It kind of seemed extraneous. And so I never really had that much interest in it. But then at some point, this kind of idea of ayahuasca just started coming up more and more and more. And they often have a saying of, you know, these strong plants like ayahuasca, that in a way we don't search for them, that they find us. And that I think if we need them and if we're meant to experience them, then when the time is right, then they'll find us. Mm. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. And I think in a way that's kind of what happened. And at a certain point, I just had this really strong need or curiosity to experience some of these stronger plants. And I think that was really the impetus that first led me down to the Amazon to work with this kind of system that they work with, which is really a traditional system that you find all over the world, very similar to Ayurveda or traditional Chinese medicine, or I think any kind of holistic medicine, which is really just looking at the person as an entire organism and seeing that often the root of all disease is some sort of imbalance, and that when we treat the person, when we treat the root of the cause, then we can bring that person back into balance. And so, yeah, I guess that's a bit of background with me.
Well, and Jason, you've done an extraordinary amount of different plant medicines. And can you speak to, you've done a lot of ayahuasca from my understanding, and can you speak to as to whether or not ayahuasca or these different plants, whether or not they're addictive?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think in a lot of our culture, we tend not to question things. And so we have these kind of ideas and these labels of certain things are drugs and certain things are medicine. But, you know, I think like a lot of people who have a good knowledge of medicine, you often hear the same saying. I think maybe Paracelsus was the first person to say it, which was that, you know, the only difference between a poison and a medicine is the dosage. And, you know, nothing is inherently medicine, nothing is inherently poison, nothing is inherently a drug. It's just how we use things. And, you know, like I know in the U.S., you know, our third leading cause of death right now is actually pharmaceutical medicine. It's prescription medicine. So it's legal. It's legalized medicine, but they're drugs, you know. So a lot of these things is just how we want to classify them. I think with when you're talking especially about synthesized medicine, which incorporates pharmaceutical medicine, synthesized drugs, I think there's a much higher probability of that becoming addictive, because we're isolating something and we're synthesizing it, and we're then reproducing it at perhaps much higher rates than we could ever take it naturally. And I think when we do that, we begin to alter that natural chemical structure that we would find in nature. Mm-hmm. And that can have addictive properties. I think there's been a lot of interesting research, though, recently, too, that's maybe beginning to show that perhaps things in and of themselves are not necessarily addictive. So that even something like heroin or cocaine or tobacco or alcohol might not necessarily be addictive in and of themselves, but that, you know, perhaps addiction is something that's actually being created inside of us. And again, it's coming from some sort of imbalance. You could look at it as a chemical imbalance, an emotional imbalance, a lack, a fear. You know, there's different ways of looking at it, but that when there is that imbalance, then we tend to reach out for substances. And those substances could be anything. They could be what we call drugs. It could be sex. It could be, you know, television or extreme sports. I mean, it could really be anything. Mm-hmm. But we're trying to fill that gap. And substances that we'd often label as drugs tend to be an easy way to fill that gap. Getting back to your question with ayahuasca, I don't think there's been enough research done to conclusively say one way or the other. One problem with ayahuasca in most of the world is that it's still considered illegal. And I think a lot of that is actually because there hasn't been enough research into it. The only countries where it's legal and that you can really do research is the countries where it's indigenous to. So that upper Amazonian basin, which incorporates Peru, Ecuador, Colombia, and Brazil. And I think it seems to be that the preliminary research really shows that it's not addictive. And I think as it becomes more research, that's where the findings will begin to point to. Because, you know, as you know, you've taken ayahuasca, and it's not fun. It's not a fun experience. It's certainly the initial reactions aren't something that you look forward to. And in fact, it's quite the opposite. It often creates dread, fear, anxiety, and you know, even very strong physical sensations. Your body often even starts to react to it before you've even taken it. So even the buildup can be very intense. And you know, so usually when you begin to work with a plant like ayahuasca, you see it actually takes real courage, real strength, a real desire to just show up to drink it. Because once you begin to work with it, you start to see how difficult it actually is. So it's not something you're taking for a pleasurable effect. There has to be a real reason why you're wanting to take it. Because if there's not, you're not gonna take it. Your body, your mind is just gonna say, that's it. I don't ever want to see this thing again.
It's probably one of the biggest differences between some of the quote addictive drugs versus the plant medicines too, is I heard Gabor Mate say all addiction starts with pain and ends with pain. And anything in between is what you're trying to do to soften or numb that pain. And from what I understand, the plant medicines tend to acknowledge or meet what you're going in for.
Yeah, they tend to take you into that. And so whatever is holding us back, whatever our fears or our phobias or our sickness or our disease, whatever that may be, we tend to have to confront that. And that can be a very scary proposition. But I think like most fears or most diseases, you know, the way out of it is actually to deeply go into it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, a lot of these strong plant medicines, it's very hard work, and it's not something that we just kind of take lightly. And I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why I think it would be very difficult to get addicted to it. Having said that, I think there is that aspect too that people can become addicted. I don't think it's to the plant substance itself, but you know, you do see people, but you see this with everything, but you know, you see people who I think kind of get lost in this cycle of drinking ayahuasca to fix their problems without necessarily taking what the ayahuasca is giving them and then solving the problems themselves. And so, you know, it's very easy to get lost in this trap of, you know, using something outside of ourselves to fix our problems. And if we get lost in that, then we could get lost in that addictive cycle. Mm-hmm. And so you see people, you know, who've taken ayahuasca 300 times, 500 times, 1,000 times. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but at some point you have to ask yourself too, you know, is this benefiting me? Like, what am I getting out of this? And whatever the benefit is, what am I doing with that? Like, how is that actually affecting my life? And if we get lost in this cycle of just continuously looking outside of ourselves, then we could perhaps become lost in this addictive quality.
So when somebody is looking at different types of plant medicines and exploring the possibility of going into ceremony, you've done a number of them, right? Maybe share with us some of the differences between tobacco ceremony or ayahuasca or any of the other ceremonies that you've done.
Yeah, you know, I think often what we call these really strong plant medicines, we might refer to them as plant teachers or, you know, there's different terminology we could use, but it's usually referring to a plant that has a considerable impact both physically and mentally, emotionally, spiritually, however we want to look at that. I mean, all plants are medicine, right? I mean, I'm drinking some tea right now. That's medicine. It's having an effect in my body. It's altering. It's giving its properties to me. Mm. So everything is medicine. But yes, I think when you look around the world, there tend to be these kind of select medicines that people as groups tend to use and have a very high reverence for. And I think those specific plants tend to work on a lot of levels, and they have this ability to make quite drastic changes, both physically and you know, mentally, emotionally. So, you know, and it's interesting that a lot of these plants actually tend to be found in what we would call the New World in the Americas. Whether that's just a coincidence or whether that in other countries a lot of that traditional knowledge has been lost, you know, it's kind of unclear. That's kind of what I would guess. Whereas in a lot of these pockets in the Americas, that knowledge has just remained. It's remained intact. It hasn't been necessarily persecuted as much or lost. So, yeah, you know, within the Americas, yeah, you have these plants like ayahuasca, San Pedro, which is Wichuma, tobacco, peyote. The question was with ayahuasca, what were the differences with ceremonies?
The question would be, if somebody is looking at these different ceremonies, these different plant medicines, what are the differences between them and or similarities? And how does one go around choosing as well? And I did hear you say that it chooses you.
Yeah.
So that wasn't lost on me. But there are people who are looking for it as well.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important point. It's hard to say. I think with certain people, they find this real desire and a real calling to work with a certain plant. And why that is, how that is, you know, who knows? Certainly a plant like ayahuasca, there's a lot more information about it now. And so I think when people hear about that, there can be this inherent desire to work with it because of how it works. And people feel a real need like, hey, maybe this is something that could really help me. And I think with other plants, that information just isn't there just because it hasn't been explored as much. But again, I think getting back to what I was saying is there are these certain types of plants that tend to work in a similar way. And I think often when you work with them, that process is going to be fairly similar. So one thing they all share in common is almost all of these plants tend to work on the physical aspect of ourselves. Most of these plants tend to induce a really strong purge. So even a plant like ayahuasca, to some groups, it's actually called, like in Spanish, they would call it la purga, or the purge. So that's actually how they refer to it. They don't really refer to it as ayahuasca. They refer to it as the purge. So what it's really doing is it's purging your body. It's going in there and it's killing parasites or, you know, bacteria, certain sicknesses that we might actually be holding on to. So it's working on a physical level to purge us. And a lot of strong plant medicine has that property. It's working internally, it's clearing us, it's cleansing us. And then I think another property that they share is, especially once that physical process has happened, once our body has been cleansed, then I think a lot of these plants tend to work on another level, which is related, because there's obviously always a symbiosis between our physical being and our mental or spiritual health. And so once the physical body begins to get cleansed, then I think a lot of these plants have this ability to work on a deeper level, which is often, it's a bit difficult because it depends on how we want to describe it. You know, is when we take something like ayahuasca or tobacco or San Pedro, what's actually happening? Of course, physically, it's inducing a purge. But then most people would describe, you know, similar experiences where they begin to have a lot of clarity or past traumas come up or, you know, certain fears begin to become loosened. Their place in the universe seems clear. Depression might go away. So, you know, what's actually happening? Are there chemicals in these plants that are having an effect on our body? Is it that it's somehow altering our consciousness and we're just getting a better glimpse into our natural state? Is it you know, some people describe it as that they're having a communion with some other sort of consciousness, or is the plant simply the medium to where this one consciousness is communicating? So, you know, there's different ways of looking at it, but I think universally what these plants do is they do in a way somehow alter our consciousness. And I think sometimes that has kind of a new agey, you know, foo-foo kind of terminology, but you know, I mean, it's something that's even scientifically, you know, we know about. Our consciousness is altered all the time. When we go to sleep every night, we're operating in a different state of consciousness. You know, if that kind of runner's high, or if you do a certain sport and you feel kind of in the zone, you know, your consciousness is operating on a different level. If you're driving a car, your consciousness is operating on a different level. If you're meditating, it's on a different level. You know, our consciousness is something I think we're still just beginning to scratch the surface of learning how it actually mm-hmm. works. And I think similarly, you know, like to light, like we only see a very small spectrum of light. But we know there's a vast spectrum of light. We don't see it all the time, but it doesn't mean it's not there. It's just we don't necessarily access it all the time. And I think in a lot of ways, that's how our consciousness works too, is our normal day-to-day consciousness operates in a certain way. And what a lot of these plants have the ability to do is to put us in a state that we wouldn't necessarily normally be in. Mm. And in that state, we're able to see things in a different way, and often that way can be very healing and very helpful, and perhaps very scary, very traumatic. You know, the whole range of emotions can come up. But I think inherently, all of these plants, and from my experience and from a lot of people I've worked with, there seems to be this kind of recognition that these plants are inherently intelligent. And that might sound really weird to a lot of people, that a plant has intelligence. But I think when you begin to work with these plants, it's very hard to deny that in a way. And so when you begin to take on these plants, you know, from like an indigenous point of view, they would say that the spirit of the plant is interacting with your spirit, that spirit is being introduced to you and having an effect. And that's a real thing, you know, and I think when people begin to work with that, they begin to experience that. And I think that's where a lot of this healing work can begin to happen. And I think that's why a lot of people are drawn to this work is to experience, you know, healing, to experience, you know, I think especially in this day and age, a lot of people just feel a bit disconnected. They're not really sure what they're doing with their life, their place in the world. You know, even just looking up at the stars at any night. I mean, I think there's this sense of awe that we as humans have, and this inherent curiosity to question our place in the universe. And I think that curiosity is really, in a way, what drives people to work with this medicine. It's a curiosity to question ourselves and our place in the universe, and what the fuck is going on? You know, what does all of this mean? And different people are going to be drawn to it for different reasons. Some people purely for healing, you know. Some people purely for a sickness they may have, cancer, diabetes, which these plants do have a way of curing. Some people, it might be more of this kind of metaphysical, like, why am I here? What's going on? Or a sense of clarity, like, what should I be doing in my life? So I think there's all sorts of reasons people might be drawn to work with these plants. I think the thing is really just feeling what you feel. If there's a certain plant that you feel drawn to, you know, gravitate towards that. And in that process, you may begin to explore other plants, and other things may begin to come up. But I think with your question is most of these big plants tend to work in a similar way. They're working on many different levels, physically, mentally, emotionally, mm-hmm. and in a sense, they're cleansing, they're clearing, they're opening, and they're releasing, so that whatever needs to happen can happen. And again, whether that's the plant's intelligence or that's our intelligence, however you want to look at it, there's somehow an intelligence at work, or somehow a process, a chemical process, however we want to look at it, that begins to do its thing. And that thing is very different for different people. But in generally, it's working on this multifaceted level.
It sounds like, too, there isn't a limit to what plant medicine can work with.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's the limit of your consciousness, the limit of the universe.
Your curiosity, whatever you're curious about yourself, is pretty much where it'll go.
And I think, you know, there is a sense of having a purpose or having an intention when you work with these plants. You know, why are you working with them? Mm. You know, if it's simply to cross it off your bucket list, that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, you're going to get some sort of experience out of that. But, you know, I think another thing a lot of these plants have in common is that with almost all of them, there's this sense of ritual or sense of ceremony, a sense of respect or reverence. And different groups have different ways which they go about doing that. It could be intense periods of fasting, being in isolation, not having sex, no alcohol, no meat, no spice, you know, no, not speaking to anyone. I mean, it could be varied things, but in general, there's this sense of reverence, of really changing your life for a period of time and going outside of your normal boundaries, so that when you come to work with this plant, you're kind of in a way just very open. Mm. And you've already made a commitment. And I think there's something to be said for that. You know, when you have that intention, when you have a deep purpose or a reason to work with that plant, and you do the necessary preparation, whatever that may be, and however you want to look at that, whether it's respect for the plant, respect for yourself, or respect for the tradition, whatever that is, I think inherently you gain a lot more out of the experience by doing that. And I think a lot of that is just having a purpose, you know, having a real reason of why you want to work with this plant. Mm. Because again, you know, these things, they're not necessarily to be taken lightly, you know, because it's not the easiest experience. And I think the more you can prepare, the more you can give yourself over, and the more kind of reverence you have, the more you're going to get from that situation.
Hmm. What do you think you've learned in your experience with your ceremonies? What has shifted for you personally? I'd like to ask, I'm going to ask Jani as well. But what is it that came clear or came through for you through maybe the early ceremonies that you did?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I think what initially brought me down to the Amazon was actually working with ayahuasca. I actually went down there for kind of a workshop, and I had such an amazing experience that I actually I went back to the place where I was working at I went back to the place where I had the ceremony at, and I actually was offered a job and I started working there and kind of learning about that system. But it was interesting because I think with me, the initial ceremonies I had were by far the most profound. And I think, you know, and I worked with ayahuasca for a long time, and but I think those initial ceremonies were really the most profound. And again, there's this saying, and I think it really resonates. And it's that these plants, you know, when I was working with it was with ayahuasca. And so it was this idea that ayahuasca, it always gives you what you need. And that at the same time, it's never giving you more than you can handle. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. And so I think, you know, different people need different things. And so different people are going to be given different things. Mm. And so I think it's also important not to necessarily compare our experiences to someone else. You know, what my experience was, what I saw, what was shown to me, I think was very relevant to what I needed. Mm-hmm. And it was very profound in that way. I mean, it just, you know, for me, there's this real sense of just like the expanse of the universe and creation and just the majesty and magnificence of the universe. And it was really, really awe-inspiring. And I think it really put a lot of faith in this plant work. I mean, what it has the potential to do and just life in general. But yeah, you know, I think these plants, they're always working with us on an individual basis and giving us what we need. Mm. And so, you know, we always have to be aware of that and not necessarily put our experiences vis-a-vis someone else. So I think for me, you know, again, every ayahuasca ceremony, every plant ceremony, if you're working with tobacco or San Pedro, it has the potential to really open you up, to really open up your mind, to show you things that maybe you never could have imagined, never could have experienced, to help heal, you know, past traumas or anxieties, fears, things we might have. But I think for me, what I kind of begun to see is that, you know, all of these experiences can be very profound and very powerful. But at the end of the day, you know, we always come back to here. We always come back to this place. Mm. And this is where we always are. This reality, this moment, this time, and all of these things, they're tools, I think. And they can be profound tools and they can have profound changes. But we have to take all that stuff and we have to then apply it to our lives. Because if we don't, it's just another experience. It's just another passing moment. And so I think these plants have this ability to really show us, you know, to really show us some amazing things, to really impart a lot of change. But at the end of the day, it's up to us. It's up to us what we do. And, you know, are we a better person after? And if we're not, then, you know, maybe it's not the right path for us. But again, you know, different people are going to be different. And yeah. I think it's always really important not to compare our experiences to other people, because everyone needs different things. Everyone is completely unique. And if you do feel called to work with these plants, then you feel called. And that's the nature of it. And whatever you need, you know, again, I think if you approach it from respect, you're going to get what you need. Mm. So, yeah, I guess the second part of your question was, you know, like, how does someone go about finding these things? There's no answer to that. It's, again, you know, one curandero, one shaman could be amazing for one person and could be a horror story for someone else. One center could be amazing for 90 people, and for two people, it's going to be another horror story. Mm. You know, all of this work, it all comes down again to humans, and humans are inherently flawed. And, you know, nobody is perfect. None of the curanderos are gods. None of the shamans are enlightened people. They're doctors. They're normal people. And I think that's always important to realize. You know, wherever you end up, just really try and make sure that where you end up, that you're there to experience the plants rather than the people. Because the curandero is not going to cure you. It's always the plant. So a good curandero, I think, is someone who knows how to hold a good space, who knows how to allow the plants to do their work, who's done the work themselves. And yeah, you know, today it's becoming a big business, especially like the ayahuasca business. And mm-hmm. So you go down to a place like Iquitos, which is kind of like a big hub, or places in Brazil, Pucallpa in Peru. And it's a huge market, you know, and then there's certainly, like everything, there's a lot of people who claim to know how to work with these plants, and they might not, like anything, you know. There's no real certificate that says, hey, I'm a I'm a 10th degree black belt in plant curanderismo. So you know, you have to go with your gut, you have to go with your instinct, and maybe you're going to find a great spot. Certainly, you know, talking to other people, getting recommendations, I think that's a great way. And, you know, and you may go down and you might not feel the best at that place, and maybe you can go somewhere else. And but that's an experience too. And so, you know, I think you just have to play around, to try things out, to be flexible, and eventually you're going to find something that resonates, and maybe you don't, and then you realize, like, hey, this just it's not resonating for me, you know? And that's perfect, you know. There's certainly something else out there that will. So
it almost sounds like an experience not for the faint of heart. Although you fainted.
I wasn't doing any of the medicine, plant medicine.
I know,
at the time.
I know. But it does sound like, and just in my experiencing ceremony, I would say from a not as deep a level as the plant medicines, but experiencing ceremony nonetheless, that going into it with intent, with purpose, with curiosity, with reverence, it sounds like pretty important, and not for people just to do it, like you said. I mean, there's no judgment about doing it for a bucket list, but it's not really meant to be what do they call it, like experimenting with things for the entertainment value. It's a little bit more intentional. That's the only way.
Well, I'm thinking if it's sometimes maybe, you know, your higher spirit or purpose actually knows how to play with you. And sometimes if you are trying to do your bucket list, that it may be a way for it to get you into the medicine, even though that you haven't been drawn to it. Mm-hmm. So I always feel like wherever you are, that's where you are. And if you get into a certain spot, look, you know, sometimes for me in working with any of the plant medicines, there's a lot of things that I, a lot of benefit that I get that I had no intention whatsoever to get. And so however you get into any sort of the medicines, whether it occurs to you as being a good thing or a bad thing, because you don't know at the end of the day, it may have been something that was totally horrifying for you, but you learned a lot during the process. And then it's not until, you know, maybe could be a year later, who knows, a month, whatever it is, that you finally realize that you had some sort of benefit from that particular.
But you didn't experience. Go into it as an entertainment.
No,
that's what I'm. Not. That's what I'm saying is more about. Of course, we can't know until we mm-hmm. get to the other side what's going to come beyond it. Mm-hmm. I guess my the thing I want to bring out into the world is intention. Mm-hmm. And how every action that we take, when there's intention, it's more powerful versus just saying, oh yeah, she did that, I want to do it. But and I understand what you're saying, that sometimes the plant finds you and says, you have this conversation, but there is a pull to it. I've just noticed other people who tend sometimes go into things, and not so much plant medicine, but just other areas of life. Let's not talk about the spiritual exploration side, just basic daily life without intention. Not that they don't have intention from their high self, but again, for me, it's about bringing to light what we can do and be aware of consciously. Yeah, I don't know. I'm finding that this conversation is bringing up a number of things that have happened, I think, in recent conversations where we're not really aware of our feet planted on the ground, of actually even connecting to the earth. The fact that we are just, we're kind of walking around. Some people are walking around like zombies, and obviously plant medicine's going to kick somebody's ass and get back to reality pretty quick. And I, because you two have gone through plant medicine, I am not drawn to it at this time. Perhaps there's another time. And so how does one take, maybe from somebody who has experienced it, the learning from plant medicine? I don't know if that's a question that I can, that's clear.
Well, I'll give an example, because Jason does tobacco ceremonies, and I just recently experienced some ceremonies with him, and which are, once again, we have to say that I agree with Jason that there's just no way with these ceremonies that you can get addicted to these things, because you have to have really, really good intention sometimes I feel like I have to survive these ceremonies to get where I need to go. And so I had experienced some tobacco ceremonies with Jason. I'm going to actually have you explain what that may look like, but I'll just say what I'd learned. So as an example for some of the learnings I'd learned from the tobacco ceremonies, one of them was that I'd known, Morel, you always say to me, oh, you're rushing around, so just ground. And I had actually experienced the rushing around. You'd always told me about the rushing around, but I never experienced the feeling of rushing around. So there's a difference between someone tells you something and you actually experiencing that. And I watched how the way I was being, because I didn't know, because I was always in the rush of things, that I didn't even know I was rushing. And so I was able to observe myself that way. So it was almost, in a sense, I was able to back away from who I was being.
It's hard to explain. I know what you're saying.
Was being, and then to step back and observe it, because I was so in it,
right,
that I, you know, it's like
being
a fish.
Witness.
Yeah, it was like a fish in water, that fish don't even notice the water, right? They don't know that they're in water. So that's the thing, is I was so in the rushing of it that I didn't know that. Now I could observe it. There was no separation of observation and being.
Yeah.
So that was one of the experiences I had from that. So coming out of the tobacco ceremony, I was able to observe myself a little bit more.
Nice.
And also in the reflection of my speaking, I do speak fairly quickly when I get excited, and I'm trying to be more mindful as to breathing in between words. The other thing I really noticed through the first ceremony, I did feel really loved and cared for, and Jason's amazing with that, and giving creating the space for that. When I said, oh, I'm not sure if I can do this, I'm really nervous, and you know, he was so good at reassuring me, and I thought, okay, another ceremony. But I felt incredible love. Like, it was, I have to say, it was an amazing experience. I have to say, it was really good. And I'd only experienced something like that, but and it's fairly rare that you could feel so much love. And so that was also a nice thing to be able to experience when you don't normally experience something like that. And be able to know that that's what you can experience in the world when you let it in. And so at the end of the day, I realized that I was sort of capping myself and not letting other people in, and where I was lacking in holding my hand out, and rather than, you know, when people hold their hand out, I sort of slap it away, right? So I'm taking that into the world and experiencing that in the world. I'm sure there's other things, but that's an example of you know, the things that you can experience. And I didn't have that intention to when I went in, right? It just happened that you know, I just felt drawn to experiencing the tobacco ceremonies with Jason, because he is such an amazing person, and he holds such great space. And I just thought, what an opportunity, right? And so, and with ayahuasca, I'd heard about it for years, and it wasn't until I actually saw someone that I'd known that had never taken it before and had gone through the journey, because I'd met a lot of people who had, so I didn't notice the difference. But when I saw the difference, when they came back, I said, I want that. So it's, you know, different motivations for different people, and how you get into the space. But, you know, I have to say, I agree with Jason. You have to have a lot of courage in going through this stuff.
Yeah.
Either that or have great support. And then, you know, and you'd start digging inside and looking at what is it, how it's almost like, are you really here to make a difference?
Mm.
And pulling that out and saying, yeah, I am. Mm. And I'm willing to go through anything to make it.
Mm.
So there you go.
Oh.
But I would like to ask Jason about, you know, the tobacco ceremonies, how you got into that, what has you choose the tobacco ceremonies as being one of your practices and sharing it with the world.
Yeah, well, thank you for sharing that. So, yeah, I originally came down to the Amazon for ayahuasca. That was what was really calling me. And I ended up going back there for I think over a year working at the center where I met you, which was basically trying to integrate alternative therapies with that traditional Amazonian plant-based knowledge, mainly with ayahuasca. So integrating things like meditation, Tai Chi, nutrition, yoga, things like that. I was really drawn to work with ayahuasca, just very curious about it, just curious how that whole process works, you know, like, what is this thing? Like, how is it working? Like, how is it doing these amazing things? And, you know, like, why was it so revered by these people? Why did they choose to guard it for who knows, you know, how long? I mean, potentially thousands of years. I mean, there's a lot of interesting research right now in the Amazon that's actually maybe pointing towards the fact that the Amazon has been had civilizations that go back, you know, tens of thousands of years, maybe longer. I think this work has been around for a long time. And I think that just in and of itself, you know, shows that it's very meaningful to people and that it's withstood this test of time, I think is quite extraordinary, especially when, you know, so many other things have been lost. So while I was down there, you know, you start hearing about all sorts of plants, you know, and especially Peru is quite fortunate. There's a number of these big teacher plants, ayahuasca, huaychuma, tobacco, yopo, coca. So there's quite a few. One of the first kind of other medicines I started working with was actually not a plant medicine. It was an animal medicine. It was sometimes it's referred to as sapo or kambo. I spent some time with a group called the Matses, and they actually call it nunu. Or no, sorry, they call it akate. Nunu is what they call tobacco. But it's basically it's an excretion from a frog, and it's kind of a venom, and you make these little burn marks on your arm, and you insert the venom into those burn marks. And it has a very kind of similar way of working, extremely strong purging effect. And it can also have an effect on the consciousness. Again, it's working in a different way. But again, just really curious about all these plants or even these different animal medicines. And so, you know, I started experimenting with different plants. I think one thing is with me is when I work with something, I really try and give myself over to that way of working and not try and do too many things at once. It's just kind of how I like to work. I like to be able to isolate one thing so that I really know what kind of an effect that's having. So very early on, I was drawn to tobacco. Tobacco is also one of the big kind of plant medicines down in the jungle. But I think a lot of that information has been lost. A lot of that history and tradition is, you know, for better, for worse, it's not quite there. I had known some people who were working with tobacco, but I think the way in which it was being worked with just didn't really resonate with me at the time. And eventually a guy from my first ayahuasca workshop was down in Iquitos. He had been down there the whole time, kind of just, you know, working with different plants. And, but, you know, we were friends and we stayed in touch, and I'd see him from time to time, and I just started to notice a really big shift in him. And he started talking about this tabacero who he's working with. The tabacero is someone who works with tobacco. And kind of just seeing the change in him, and eventually hearing about his process, I became really intrigued. And so I ended up going to this guy. Eventually, I kind of set up my schedule where I could get a few days off. And I did like a week-long diet with this guy. And it was really tough, you know, as Jenny knows, it was really tough. And I was drinking it every night for 7 days, not really eating anything in isolation. The first night after drinking it, I mean, I was floored. Extreme nausea. I couldn't move my body. I literally couldn't even lift the bucket to vomit. And it went on like that for what seemed like hours. And I just remember, you know, cursing my friend. And I really thought I was going to die. I mean, I thought that was the end, giving thanks to my family. But I ended up making it. And for whatever reason, I did it for another 6 nights out of pure stubbornness. But I remember when I finished, because there's different ways we can work with plants. Often there's this kind of ceremonial way, which is often like how ayahuasca is worked with, or, you know, just kind of these one-off ceremonies where you sit and you experience the medicine. In the jungle, often when you want to learn from a plant, you do something which is different, which is called a dieta or a diet. You actually diet a plant. So in essence, you eat very little or no food, and you're basically just ingesting that plant over a long period of time. And that's kind of the way in which they say you learn from the plant. So the plant actually begins to teach you what it can do. It does its thing. It heals you, or it shows you its nature. And so in essence, that's what I was doing. I was dieting this tobacco plant. And when I finished, I just had a very different feeling from when I worked with ayahuasca. It was, I think often when people describe ayahuasca, they talk about these trips they go on, these journeys, and kind of, you know, traveling out into space and having these really revelatory experiences and definitely healing. But with the tobacco, I found it to be much different. It was just much more grounding, much more simple. I never really went anywhere other than where I was, but where I was just became very, very clear. And when I left, I just felt like really good, really grounded, really solid. Mm-hmm. And I knew that there was something in that plant that I was really connected to and something I wanted to continue to learn. And I also felt really connected to the guy who I was working with. Kind of like Jenny was saying, you feel like really loved and really cared for. And I think that's really important to creating a safe space where you feel like you can really kind of let go. Mm. Because I think a lot of this work, there is a lot of inherent anxiety, fear, uncertainty, because it's inducing these experiences, which can be so intense that, feeling cared for is really, really important. And I also just felt like this guy, like, really, really had done the work himself and really knew what he was doing. And he somehow knew these plants in a way that I hadn't met anyone who knew how to work with them in that way. And so I think at that point, I just decided, like, this is what I want to do. I want to learn how he's working with plants. And so I went back and I did it. I did a series of diets with him over the course of almost 2 years, I think. Mm. Basically just being in a room in the back of his house, surrounded by chickens and cats fighting, you kind of look at the room and you take a deep breath and you're like, okay, this is my home for the next year and a half. But there was something in me that just felt compelled to do it. And why or for what reason, I'm still not sure, but it was just there. And so I followed through with it. And So, you know, I ended up doing a series of I think 14 plant diets with him, all working with big trees. So a lot of the Cordanderos down there, they believe that like big trees are kind of our teacher plants. Mm-hmm. They're this connection between the earth and the sky. Mm-hmm. And when you diet those trees, you begin one to cleanse yourself physically, emotionally, but then those trees, in a way, they begin to protect you, which again might sound kind of weird. But in a sense that once you've finished your own process of dieting these different trees, that in a way you've prepared yourself. You've done the work yourself so that you can then begin to hold space with these plants, which I think, you know, a lot of this stuff I'm still wrapping my head around. You know, it's I think it's a learning experience, mm-hmm. that lasts your entire life. Mm-hmm. But I think it's like anything. You know, I'm for example, I'm really drawn to martial arts, and you know, there's no easy way around it. No one can teach you anything magical. You can't watch a video and become an expert. It's the only way is you show up day after day and you do it. And I think that's similar to this work, is you have to do it. You have to go through that ringer yourself. You have to experience all of those things so that eventually, you know, if that's even a correct way of putting it, is when you come out the other end, if that's, you know, if that's ever even a real point in time. But,
yeah.
You know, at some point, either someone else has kind of given you that blessing, or you yourself realize, which I think usually happens. They're pretty much one and the same, is that you realize like, okay, hey, like I'm beginning to understand what this is. I still a lot of gray areas, but you begin to feel comfortable in holding that space, mm-hmm. simply by knowing that you've done it yourself, and that whatever may arise, that it's okay, that you'll get through it, and that because you get through it, everyone else will get through it too. And so I think that's, you know, that's what really drew me to tobacco. In a large part, I had a really strong connection to it, and in a large part, the person who I was connected to, that was also the big plant that he used to heal. Mm. You know, you hear some people, you know, especially people who spend a long time in the jungle, I think they get really attached to certain ways. And, you know, some people say, oh, well, tobacco is that's the best medicine. Or other people say, oh, you know, it's ayahuasca. Or other people, mm-hmm. San Pedro. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe one is better, but I think they're all different but they're all working in a similar way. And it's just, you know, finding what that is for you. And with me, it's, I think tobacco is just a really, really strong plant. And I think I'll continue to work with ayahuasca, and who knows, you know, maybe one day I'll work with another plant too. But, yeah, you know, I think it's just, you find something that works, and if it works, you go with it. And you know, I think tobacco is also a really interesting plant because it has all of these weird connotations too. And I think initially, you know, when we hear someone working with tobacco, it's kind of like do a double take for a second, because, you know, we're ingrained with this knowledge that tobacco is inherently bad. And, you know, we have all of this evidence and stuff to back it up. And so it's tough, you know, because, you know, historically tobacco probably was the most used plant in all of the Americas. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the way, you know, they found tobacco all the way in the tips of South America, all the way to the tips of North America. And it was a revered medicine, which might be strange for people to hear that word associated with tobacco, but it was a revered medicine. It was perhaps the most revered medicine by all of the indigenous peoples, mm-hmm. throughout the Americas. And I think because of that, you know, especially when the Europeans came over, because it was so revered, it began to be used, you know, very prevalently. It was consumed as chewing tobacco, as snuff, as cigars, as pipe tobacco. And you know, what happened is eventually over time, they switched from what was the older strain, which is a very, very strong form of tobacco. It's not something you could, you know, smoke very much of. I mean, you know, one, what in the jungle, they call it mapacho. It's Nicotiana rustica. It's the kind of the wild strain of tobacco, or a more heirloom strain. You know, if you've never smoked before and you take one mapacho, I mean, it'll knock you out. You'll probably vomit. So, you know, eventually I think they switched over to a much milder strain so that people could become more, you know, they could smoke more, they could profit. And then I think, you know, unfortunately what happened with tobacco is, when we speak of tobacco, we're not really speaking of tobacco. We're usually talking about cigarettes. And unfortunately with cigarettes, there's very little, if anything, to do with tobacco now in cigarettes. It's an amalgamation of reconstituted cheap tobacco, which is basically scraps glued together and then recut. And then, you know, you're adding like 600 chemicals to every cigarette that when you combust them turn into 4,000 chemicals. So, you know, it's sad in a way that we have that association, but it is what it is. And, I think when anyone looks at it from a balanced point of view, I mean, like, all plants are medicine. All plants are here for a reason. All plants serve a purpose. And none of those purposes is bad. You know, I don't think God, like, put some plants on the earth and said, you know, these are evil. These will kill people.
You're a bad plant. Right. You're a good plant.
And so, like anything, it's learning how to use a plant, how to work with it. And I think with tobacco, it's a very, very, very strong plant and a very beautiful plant. And if we work with it in its pure form and we work with it in the way it was meant to be worked with, it can be a very, very medicinal plant. And I think there's also a part of me that in a way hopes to bring some of that knowledge back, because I think it's a plant that there is so much stigma with now, and so much of the knowledge has also been lost. You know, also curiously in the Amazon, like often the word for shaman was the same word as tobacco. So a shaman was simply one who worked with tobacco, and still today, I mean, tobacco is an integral part to most shamans, to most Cordanderos, whether it's their primary plant. It's certainly a plant that they work with a lot. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really important plant. And, you know, I think unfortunately through persecution and through, you know, the church and disease and just a whole bunch of reasons, you know, a lot of those shamans are dead. You know, they don't exist anymore, and that knowledge has really been lost. So I think just getting that back out there is really important. And it's a really, really, really powerful plant, you know, and it's up there with ayahuasca and San Pedro and all of these plants, and it has an ability to really help and heal.
And it is not an illegal ceremony.
And it's not illegal. Yeah, which is really important, yeah. You know, too. It's logistically just working with it. I mean, that's always a concern, having access to it. It's a really hardy plant. You know, you can grow it anywhere. It grows all over the world. So it's really accessible. And that's a big thing. It's, I think especially now in this world, you know, more and more in this kind of globalized economy, we ship things all over the world, and we have superfoods from the Amazon and cheese imported from France and, you know, just all of this crazy stuff, which is great, but it's kind of unsustainable when you look at it. And I think, you know, a lot of the way the world is going to be moving towards in the future is working with things that are local, which are always what's best for you anyway, at the end of the day. And I think for that reason, tobacco is really good because it can almost always be local. It's always there, and it's if you know how to use it, it can be really beneficial.
So speaking of local, you are presently in the Vancouver area.
I am, yes.
And are you offering your ceremonies anywhere else as well? If people are looking for it, we're going to share your website on the description page of the show, but can people fly you to where they want to go, or, you know, how can people experience this amazing, amazing ceremony?
Yeah. So, I started working with it, down in the jungle. And I've made my escape, I guess, but I've only been out for a few months. So I'm kind of just getting settled here in Vancouver. So it's something I'd really like to start to do. And it's something I've been working on setting up is maybe holding like weekly tobacco ceremonies here, or bi-weekly, depending on the interest. So, that's something I hope to do pretty soon. If you are interested, you can go to the website and there's a lot of information. There's contact details, and eventually too, it's something I would like to start doing, which is starting to travel too, and trying to bring it to more people, because it's tough for a lot of people, you know. Some of us we may be really fortunate that we can take 2 weeks off and go down to the Amazon and, you know, have this amazing experience, but for a lot of people that's just it's unrealistic.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely something I'd like to start doing. You know, how and when that works, we'll see. I probably will be in California within the next couple of months, maybe San Francisco and LA, doing some ceremonies there. But certainly, you know, it's all kind of a work in process, and we'll see how the ride unfolds. But I love traveling, so yeah. If anyone wants to fly me out somewhere.
I love planting those seeds. When people listen, you never know who's going to be hearing it. So what would you like to close with? What would you like to leave our listeners with around plant medicine?
it's a big question.
I know.
It's a beautiful world. I mean, you know, plants truly are... There are brothers, there are sisters, and you know, we literally couldn't be alive without plants. You know, we exist in a symbiotic relationship with plants. You know, plants give off oxygen, we breathe in oxygen, we give off CO2, they inhale the CO2. You know, they filter our water, they provide our medicine, they provide our food. I mean, we literally exist because of plants. And I think, you know, just recently, we're starting to have kind of proper scientific research into what plants do on all sorts of levels, medicinally, but even things like, you know, the consciousness of plants. Like, you know, we know now that plants feel, that they think, that they communicate. There's so much value in it. And, you know, whatever you feel drawn to, whether it's just, you know, planting a garden or becoming interested in like really basic herbal medicine, or whether it is maybe working with some of these bigger plants like tobacco, ayahuasca, peyote, just going with it and, you know, listening to yourself. And if you feel called to do it, trying to find someone that you feel comfortable working with and doing it. But, you know, at the same time, always being gentle with yourself, you know, knowing your limits, feeling comfortable, feeling safe, making sure you really want to do it. But then if you do, then also really going for it, you know, really, because it can be really tough. And like I said, it takes a lot of courage, but that courage does pay off. Mm-hmm. And there's a tremendous amount we can learn and grow and just become better people. And so, you know, all of these things, they're really gifts. They're all gifts. And if you feel called, then go for it.
Thank you.
Thank you guys.
Yeah. Thank you so much. That's such wisdom and information for those who like the mind.
I'd love it. And thank you for sharing who you are and the medicine, especially the medicine, because it's changed my life, I would say 360, in doing the variety, like the ayahuasca, the tobacco ceremonies, the poison frog, all sorts of stuff. And that's what I'd like to bring, you know, to bring people like you and their marvelous and wonderful talents out so that other people can experience it, because it's hard to, you know, get a line on what's out there if no one says anything.
Mm-hmm.
And with regards to, you know, how to choose different the plant medicines, it's kind of like listening to music. Some people like Western country. Some people like rap. And they just like to try that out. But, you know, you want to check out other varieties of music instead of just saying, no, you can only listen to Western. That's
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you can try the different ways. And then you can have your favorite because, you know, no, I mean, depending on your life, where things go,
mm-hmm.
right? Is that you'll find you'll be called to a certain, you know, a certain a shaman or a certain person who does their specific thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's how I would choose as well. Is time and place is always. There's always a time and place, right?
Yeah, it's definitely an important part for everyone, for sure. Not to be told, but to be drawn to it.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Thank you, Jason, so much for giving of your time today.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, that's it for us on Calling All Black Sheep. Or we will be having a number of different guests on the show in the coming weeks. Jani and I are really looking forward to continuing our journey with everybody on Calling All Black Sheep.
It's fun, hey?
It's always fun. Okay, well, until next time, I am Marielle.
And I'm Jani, in light and in love. Have a great week.
Bad. Bad. We'll be back.